Stephen Paulus has earned an international reputation, writing music for all kinds of performers, but he's best known for his choral output. That gives him a unique perspective on language, because he has to look beyond the words to the sounds behind them. A few years ago, Stephen Paulus stopped into our studios just after putting 6 poems to music for the Festival Choir of Madison. I was curious about that business of reshaping language to make it musical, and I asked him whether, for him, the music starts in a particular phrase in the poem.
It can happen a couple of ways. There may be one phrase that's more musical than others, or if you've hit a gold mine, the whole poem seems musical from the get-go. Like you'll see a word and you'll think, oh, I can open quietly with that, and the poem gets a little more active, and you think, and this will give me a place to grow musically. The key thing, a good friend of mine whom I've worked with a lot, Michael Dennis Brown, on operas, song cycles, choral pieces, teaches creative writing at the University of Minnesota, and he has said that the poet finds a structure in the poem. You have to have structure and form when you're creating something. And then he goes on to say, because he gives this talk on music and poetry, and he says, the composer finds yet another form when pairing the poem with the pitches that make up a musical piece. And often that form is different, at least slightly, from the original poem, because when we find phrases that we like, we'll say, oh, I want to repeat that, and I want to use bigger chords right. each time. Well, you've changed the poem a little bit, but you've made a new form that people want to hear because it's a musical form.
Bringing the two things together is what you do, but they do start out, don't they, as separate languages? I mean, music is a language that speaks all by itself. Music does not require words to communicate.
No, but one of the magical things about pairing the words and the music is that I think it really makes for more power, more drama, more emotive and passionate capabilities when you pair the two, because the words already have a certain meaning. A poem by itself, especially when you hear it read by a poet who has a dramatic voice and knows where he or she wants to place pauses and enunciates in a certain way, and that's a performance, you know, if you go to hear a poetry reading, of course. When you pair those words that already have meaning by themselves with different harmonies and melodies that, like you say, can convey a meaning. If it's just oboe and a string orchestra, you can convey a wonderful meaning of melancholy or cheerfulness or sprightliness just with that. If somehow you have words that have been paired with pitches, I think it gives them a heightened sense of importance and drama and passion, if you want to go that route. Mm-hmm. So it makes them even more important. In a way, you're kind of wrecking the poem by making it fit into a different mold, but you're also making a new form that says this poem is not only good, it's fabulous because it can be paired with sounds that mean things to us as an audience.
Maybe you can demonstrate a little bit. The first one that you did for the festival choir was Grass by Dave Etter. Was there a particular phrase in this one? Do you remember the composition of this piece?
I do, and one thing I wanted to say about it is I ended up selecting this as the opening piece of the Prairie Songs. There's so many things that go into actually creating the musical composition, but I don't want it to seem overly complicated. So if I just start from some point here, I can say I wanted the piece to start much as the prairie does, whether it's on a morning or a summer day or whatever. It's big, it's wide, and it's expansive, but it's also very subtle, and it doesn't leap out at you sometimes. It just sort of creeps up on you, and it's there. So what I wanted to do was give the idea that there's space in the prairie. Mm-hmm. So the very thing I do is start with a fourth. It's just two parts, tenors and basses, and they sing, the spring grass is growing. Is that a great line? I don't know. But if you think about it in the context of the prairie, it means something is happening. But I don't want to give away the whole nine yards from the beginning and make a big statement out of the spring grass is growing. Let's, you know, do like that. It's not that kind of a thing. The spring grass is growing. It happens like one micromillimeter at a time. So it starts out just with the tenors and basses doing the spring grass is growing. And it's like this.
Growing.
what happens there is that you also look, when I was reading this line, you look not only at the idea, the spring grass is growing, but you also look at words that have certain vowels. The spring, spring is a little bit difficult word to say because there's so many sounds in it, but you see where this phrase is headed. The spring grass is growing, and the O sound is a nice one to make. So instead of just, in the other parts I played, each note has, or each word or each syllable has one note. The spring grass is, but you get to the word growing, and as a what we call tone painting or word painting.
Yeah, that O really wants to grow,
the
doesn't
O
it?
Wants to grow, so let it grow musically. So we do growing. Right. Then I reiterate it, and it's sort of like when you can find a good thing in a text, like this word growing, you think, well, I want the piece to grow just the same way that the spring grass is growing.
Now, thinking of this same poem still later, there are some more complicated phrases where maybe the language of the poet restricts you a little bit.
Yeah, in a way, it restricts you or it demands, if we were to treat the whole poem like that, like what I just did on the word growing, you'd be saying that all the words are of equal interest in terms of their sound. Growing is interesting because of the O sound and what it means, growing.
And so, also, of course, the fact that you're beginning a six-song cycle here and you want to get it well planted.
Right, so there are times where you actually, where the poet says, you know, the gatherings of laughing men, for instance, and I just have to move it along. I can play that if you like.
Sure.
Let's see.
You can hear that, the gatherings of laughing men.
Exactly. Yeah. And they get to a high point because I'm trying to whip the music up to the point where we say, oh, something, if the men are laughing, it's probably billowing in sound. So we get them up to this.
Gatherings of laughing men, of men, of men.
Other things that you think about when you're setting text to music is where the voices are going to be sitting when they sing. In this case, the sopranos are singing a high G, so it's got to be pretty loud because they're going to make a loud sound up there. The tenors are high, the basses are high, even the altos are pretty high. So that's the gatherings of laughing men is making much more of a statement than this growing, which is very quiet in the beginning.
I mean, you started this in the spring, you're ending it in the winter. That certainly makes a kind of chronological sense. Does it also musically develop that way?
Actually, what you're talking about was just, it was a desire. Oftentimes, when you write a piece of music, you operate on several levels at the same time. One is the obvious one we've been talking about, which is to represent the text. Another was the idea of capturing prairie somehow. And sort of a third one was simply to progress through seasons so that, you know, the prairie does that. So why shouldn't we do that if we're listening to something about the prairie? And it sort of ends up there with one capstone being this business about the old church or our old church, which I felt was like, it was a place I wanted to end up because of the importance of the church in prairie life and in small town life. And that particular poem and setting has a feel to it, as far as I'm concerned, almost like coming home or coming back to your roots. And it's very, has a nostalgic quality that I also talked about wanting to put into this set.
Church is nearby, a well-worn road. Upon a hill that has no grass or tree, the winds from
the old church, the last of these pieces, it has a very clear image to it.
Mm-hmm.
The poetry, of course, creates that image. It's an old, weather-beaten church. It's out in the middle of the prairie. It's the wind blowing
alone.
Around it. It stands alone. There's no one nearby. that seems to demand certain things of you as a composer. Not only are you bringing people home, but you have to work in the what you would hear in a church. Maybe it offers you all sorts of opportunity.
Well, it does, and I'm glad you mentioned, you know, what you have to or might happen to hear in a church, because I decided this is not really a hymn, but it has qualities almost of a hymn, which I wanted to get across.
The old church leans nearby a well-worn road upon a hill that has no grass or tree. It's not, you know, actually this strikes me as a poem that may be better sung than read.
Oh, really?
Maybe okay. By the time you get it out, I don't know.
Okay.
The winds from off the prairie now unload the dust they bring around it fitfully. Was there a phrase in this one that you began with?
This is one of those things where I think I just sat down, and sometimes the way I compose is sometimes just read something and I go, oh, okay, this seems like it ought to be these sounds. And I think I literally sat down and started horsing around with some chords and came up with a phrase like this that opens the thing. The old church leans nearby a well-worn road. There's a little bit of resignation in that. Leans nearby a well-worn road. And the wonderful symbolism in this poem is it's not just about a little church. It's about a church that's seen families grow old and tragedy come in to the family and joyous occasions and the nostalgia that goes with, you know, watching that son or daughter grow up and move on to a career or get married or move out or whatever. And I just sort of sat down and I came up with these harmonies that work for it.
Stephen Paulus wrote the Prairie Songs for the Festival Choir of Madison under the direction of Eric Tonnell.